They've got their health care reform bill now in the Senate, but Democrat Jay Rockefeller is having regrets about the public option, the name at least.
A lot of it is the word public. Option is a good word. I wish we'd thought of that a year ago.
Well, could a name change help? Let's ask Rodney Dangerfield.
I said, I don't understand. I mean, is it good to change your name? He said, of course, I always keep changing my name. In fact, right now, I can give you a very good deal. I have a new name coming in next week, and I need the space.
The Whatchamajigger. The Whatchamajigger. Yeah. Who can be against that?
Thingamajigs, Whatchamajiggers, and Dangerfields, a huge milestone for healthcare reform. We're taking names on The Takeaway.
All across America, this is The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Celeste Headlee from Public Radio International and WNYC.
Good Monday morning, everyone. It's Monday, November 23rd. I'm John Hockenberry. Celeste Headlee is out today. Also on the program, when bad mortgages become good business. Two perfect seasons and one huge upset in the NFL. And disclosing you are bankrupt, announcing you are headed for jail, not the father of your kids, that you've always hated your mother, etc. Things we don't recommend you bring up at the Thanksgiving dinner table. But first, Takeaway DC correspondent Todd Zwillick joins us. Todd, good morning.
Good morning, John.
So it sounds like they're pretty nervous about the name Public Option down there in the Senate. Is a name change going to help anything?
Well, Jay Rockefeller's a little bit nervous about the name. He's a strong proponent of the public option. It's going to take a lot more than a name change, John, because you've got at least four moderate to conservative Democrats who say they aren't voting for the public option,
right,
either in name or in function until it changes a lot or goes away completely to get this thing off the floor.
I mean, based on what happened over the weekend, how durable do you think this 60-vote majority is?
Well, right now it's not durable at all because it's not a question of Republicans peeling these conservative Democrats away. It's a question of Harry Reid finding a way to get them back on. You know, they got this bill on the floor for him, but now they have all said they need a lot of work to get this bill to a point where they will vote for it again on public option,
right,
abortion, and cost. So it's really a question of getting them on there. And Ben Nelson said it's more than a question of nuance. It's fundamental change.
Well, thanks, Todd. We're going to talk about the issue of cost in just a moment, but now everything else you need to know this morning. Lines are being drawn in the sand as senators prepare to debate that health care reform bill. One of the most contentious points remains the public option, as Todd Zwillick says, which Senator Dianne Feinstein told Meet the Press is necessary to keep the insurance companies in check.
This is the reason for the public option, to put out there some competition that will sober this huge for-profit 800-pound gorilla.
Republican Lamar Alexander wasn't buying it, though.
It's the same turkey you didn't like in August, and it's not going to taste any better on Thanksgiving.
The floor debate starts next week after Thanksgiving. Professed 9/11 mastermind Khalid Sheikh Mohammed and four of his accused accomplices planned to tell a courtroom only blocks away from the World Trade Center site what they did and why they did it. Their lawyer says the accused terrorists will plead not guilty and use their civilian court trial to air their criticisms of the United States. A deadly day for U.S. soldiers in Afghanistan. The military says four service members have been killed in the past 24 hours. The lawyer for Major Nidal Malik Hassan says the suspected Fort Hood shooter is paralyzed from the waist down from a bullet he took during the shooting. Doctors believe the paralysis is permanent. And federal investigators are at the Three Mile Island nuclear power plant in Pennsylvania this morning after a small amount of radiation was detected over the weekend. Spokesman Bell Archer says
no contamination was found outside of the containment building. There was no threat to public health and safety.
The investigation still continues. Gold hit another record high as the Asian markets were mixed. The Dow looks to rebound after 3 days of losses when it opens at 10,318, and futures are up. So when Wall Street gets underway this morning, we expect a positive opening. The Twilight Saga New Moon had the biggest opening, third biggest opening of weekend opening of all time, $140 million here in the U.S. So we're going to talk about healthcare costs in a moment. And the question really for you this morning is, have you ever had to ration healthcare costs, take a look at options and decide in a very tough decision which options to choose and which to reject? Tell us your story at 877-8MYTAKE or MyTAKE at thetakeaway.org. The ability to ration and to make those tough choices is going to be the difference between failure and success in healthcare reform.
You're listening to The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Celeste Headlee.
Good morning, everyone. John Huckenberry here. Celeste Headlee is taking a sniffly flu season day off this morning. We'll see her tomorrow. Sunday gave us all a 60-vote majority in the Senate. The procedural vote on the health care reform bill, it passed. The filibuster-proof majority that the Democrats have in the Senate is solid for now. But for how long? The real hard debating begins on the floor of the U.S. Senate starting next week. And front and center will be this issue.
Every other major industrialized nation but the United States has a budget for how much taxpayer funds are allocated to health care, because they've all recognized that you could bankrupt your country without it.
So you're talking about rationing.
Listen, we ration now. We just don't ration rationally.
That's David Walker, former head of the Government Accountability Office, speaking with Steve Croft on 60 Minutes last night in a story that's all about the distorted allocations of taxpayer money in health care as we currently do health care in the United States. Could that change? All agree that whatever version of the health care reform bill that emerges from the Congress, possibly by the end of the year, won't have succeeded unless it contains mechanisms to reduce somehow spiraling health care costs. At the very least, reform has to include a new way for patients and doctors to discuss healthcare options and to evaluate their care. And we saw just as recently as last week how difficult this is. New recommendations on breast cancer and cervical cancer screenings that could produce exactly a cost-saving result produced all kinds of anxiety and concern among doctors, among patients. How difficult is this all going to be? Well, joining us now is Arthur Kaplan, director of the Center for Bioethics at the University of Pennsylvania. Good morning, Art.
Hey, John. How are you?
And Dr. Stacy Berg, pediatric oncologist at Texas Children's Hospital, also joins us. Doctor, good morning.
Good morning.
Well, first of all, Arthur, generally speaking, we don't have much of a tradition in the United States of having serious discussions, doctor-patient or hospital to community or government to taxpayers, as to how we allocate funds for health care, correct?
I think that's true. I think we have a tradition of burying the cost of things. When your employer supplies insurance to you, you don't see very much in the way of what it's costing really to buy your insurance, if you will. When it's a bedside, it's fair to say that people have no idea how to read a hospital bill. They don't want to look at them. We try as hard as we can to disguise the fact that healthcare costs us money.
So we saw last week with the new recommendations on screenings for mammograms and prostate mammograms and pap smears, that people feel good when they're tested. People feel good getting tested more, even if it's not scientifically recommended. Do you think this tension between science and a kind of feel-good sense of being checked out is also at work in the healthcare debate in Congress?
I do. I think that America has a culture of more is better. And in the face of disease, doing something is better than doing nothing. And that extends, obviously, into the realm of prevention. So we like to feel that there are things we can do to take charge of cancer and be on top of preventing it and controlling what's going on. And it even appeals to our sense of personal responsibility. Very important that we feel like we're doing the right thing in healthcare. We've been told to take charge and try to do what's necessary to control our health. So these are all things that don't square up when the data says, you know, screening under 50 for breast cancer, that just may not be the best way to spend money.
All right. Arthur Kaplan is director of the Center for Bioethics at the University of Pennsylvania. Dr. Stacy Berg, in many ways, changing our frequency of pap screenings and breast cancer mammograms, in many ways, is the low-hanging fruit. It's the easy cost savings. What are the harder kind of single, maybe end of life or difficult, maybe oncological questions that you deal with every day?
Well, one of the things I'd like to say is that I'm not sure that the point behind changing the recommendations for screening for breast cancer with mammograms, for example, is about cost savings. It's about the risks and benefits. And although cost may also be a part of the conversation whenever we talk about the appropriate way to apply a test, I think in this particular case, cost was not a major part of the conversation. The real conversation was for patients or for women who are getting mammograms. Do getting mammograms when you're under 50 give you benefits compared with the things that happen that are risky or that are undesirable outcomes.
You know, you make a really important point. Let's focus on that nuance for a second. I think a lot of Americans, when they hear people making this cost-benefit analysis, this scientific inquiry into whether this test is worthwhile, they hear something different going on. They hear it's too expensive. The rich people are going to get this test, but I'm not. How do we change that?
Well, I think we did hear that certainly on television in the days after the recommendations were released, and we heard it in the newspaper, and I think we heard it from some of our advocacy groups and our colleagues. I think the way we need to change it is, first of all, as Art mentioned, by having a rational dialogue become part of our psyche when it comes to health care. Everyone knows that it costs money. No one knows how much it costs, and no one knows really how much it costs me as an individual. It's very hard to understand that about your own health care. And when it comes to difficult things like figuring out exactly how much benefit there is of a screening procedure or how much benefit there is of a surgical procedure or, say, of a new anti-cancer drug, I think that we have to start with an honest dialogue and a willingness to try to understand some of the difficult concepts of statistics and odds, and then we can try to figure out how do those apply to me as a doctor speaking to a patient? How do those apply to me as a woman trying to decide whether to get a mammogram when I turn 40? These sorts of things.
But Dr. Berg, you know, and I don't want to push you necessarily in this direction, but as a pediatric oncologist, these kinds of discussions couldn't be more difficult, I would think.
No, these kinds of discussions are always very difficult, and we relatively seldom make any decisions in pediatric oncology based on cost, but we talk all the time about what are the risks to your child, what are the benefits to your child. And one of the reasons that these conversations are so difficult is that if we knew exactly what would happen to any individual, then we would be able to say very clearly, here's what you should do. The difficulty is when we look at a broad population and we say, all right, for 2,000 people, here's what will happen to most of them, and then try to make a decision for one person based on that.
Oh, that's a perfect, you know, a probability is a probability, but one life is one life, that's
exactly.
For sure. Dr. Stacy Berg, pediatric oncologist at Texas Children's Hospital. Very quickly, Art Kaplan, do you see anything in this health care bill that will help Americans get into these kinds of discussions in a responsible way?
Ironically, I do, because I think if we're all in the same boat, if we extend coverage out to everyone, then we all have a stake in trying to figure out, well, really, what is this going to cost us as we begin, in a sense, to have to work on this together?
There's
keeping a quarter of the population out is rationing in the worst way.
There's the takeaway, getting more stakeholders in the entire debate. Arthur Kaplan, director of the Center for Bioethics at the University of Pennsylvania, talking about health care reform. It passed in the Senate. Where does it go from here? You know, you can catch the show live Monday through Friday. Thanks for listening. If you have any feedback or think there's any stories we should be covering on The Takeaway, contact us at 1-877-8-MY-TAKE or mytake@thetakeaway.org. See ya.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex. Of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.